I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Gita Llewellyn, Swansea City fan and contributor to the Jackcast podcast. You can find that on Twitter at the Jackcast.
I'm Richard Burns. I'm a Manchester City fan. I write about City for Yahoo Sport UK and contribute to the Blue Moon podcast. And I'm on Twitter at Richard the Burns.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us, guys. Up first, as usual, we have Making the Rounds, where we each will talk for a few minutes about what's been happening at our clubs recently.
2017 couldn't really be more different to 2016. If we're being honest, everything that Paul Clement could have changed, he has changed. And it's had a positive impact. And that Saturday's match against Burnley really showed how far we've come. It was probably the most satisfying result of the season so far because everything which could have gone against us in that match did. Luck, terrible refereeing decision. But they didn't give up and they kept on going. We took the lead early on against Burnley. They were just inviting us to attack and then stunning Leroy Fair cross was headed in. We also hit the bar and the post within 20 seconds of each other, which was pretty incredible. And we hit the crossbar as well in the second half, which showed how nothing seemed to be going right. And obviously, just after we scored in total control, a ball goes into our area and Sam Vokes sticks an arm out to control it. And somehow the referee gives a penalty to Burnley. It was one of the weirdest decisions you'll see all season. Anthony Taylor isn't my favourite ref. I don't think he's many people's favourite ref, but he certainly didn't do much to endear himself to Swansea fans. It was a shocker, let's be fair. But that gave Burnley a way back into the game. They didn't really deserve that goal, but they got it. And then after 60 minutes, having done absolutely nothing all game, they took the lead. Andre Gray, lovely turn and shot into bottom corner. Really well taken goal, but questions to be asked of our centre backs, how he got so much space. But we kept on trying, and nothing really seemed to be happening. And you've just felt there's one of those days where it's just not going your way. But then another beautiful assist from Gylfie Sigurdsson, who backheeled into the path of Martin Olsen, who's had a brilliant impact since he arrived from Norwich, and he blasted it past Paul Robinson in the Burnley goal. That's his second goal since he arrived here. He could not be a more different player to Neil Taylor, who he had at left back before. It just makes such a difference having an attacking presence at left back. Gives the team far more balance and makes us a lot more difficult to play against. But it was 2-2, and again the chances, we had a lot of half chances, but couldn't quite get that key goal that we needed. And then in added time, Fernando Llorente, not for the first time this season, popped up and got a goal, which gets us 3 points. And Q, just incredible scenes around the Liberty. Paul Clement running down the touchline. Imagine Jose Mourinho for Porto at Old Trafford, that kind of thing. And then at full time, he did a kind of lap of the stadium, punching the air. And you could see how much it meant to him. And already there's a brilliant bond between manager and fans. He seems to be loving the way things are going. It couldn't have really gone much better. I actually worked out today that if the season had started on January 1st, 2017, the Swans would be in the top five. We've collected. That's pretty incredible, isn't it? We've picked up 5 wins from 8 games. The only teams we've lost to are Manchester City, Chelsea, and Arsenal. It just shows how we've been picking a point at with such regularity. And when you consider, at the turn of the year, we had 12 points, and we were rock bottom of the Premier League. And now we have 27 points, and we're 5 points clear of the relegation zone. The turnaround is absolutely incredible. And there's a major feel-good factor on the club as well again. Fans were making some great noise all ends of the stadium, singing, really. And there seems to be a feeling now that things are going in the right direction, and we just want to sustain this momentum, really. But the performances are just completely transformed. I didn't think under Bob Bradley that this squad was capable of playing anywhere near this level. But a few new signings and a new manager, and it's a completely different team. And all of a sudden, people are confident of staying up. That's not to say, that we don't have we know that we've got a very difficult few months ahead of us. A lot of the other teams down the bottom are also winning games and picking up points regularly. So it is still going to be a difficult task, but we're playing so well at the moment and getting such good results, and there's such a good vibe around the place that people really do feel that we're very capable of staying up.
All right, in this gap, Gitto, I saw that Makalele was about to be offered an extension as assistant. Do we know if that's happened or not?
We've seen the stories that he is in talks, and he's cool. He's looking to sign a new contract, as far as we understand, which would be great. He seems to be a big part of the turnaround, especially the fact that we're so much more difficult to beat now than we were during the first half of the season. We've been, since Paul Clement arrived, we were hammered by Arsenal, but that's the only game really that we've lost where we've where the opposition has had an easy time with things. I mean, we ran Man City very close, and Chelsea had to really fight to break us down. We're still conceding goals. There's no doubt about that. It's not perfect, but Makalele apparently has really worked with the defence and got us just defending as a team and defending as a coherent unit. So that's the coaching side of things. He seems to have made a big impact, but also, of course, fans love the fact that we've got a man of Claude Makélélé's stature at the club. He was such an incredible footballer, and having somebody like that at the club, it lifts the mood. People get very excited. It's another sign of how things have turned around, and hopefully, yes, he can sign this contract. He can stay with us for next season, regardless. Well, depending on which league we're in, but he seems to have been a very big part of what Paul Clement's done at Swansea, and hope he stays around. It's a bit strange to hear about contract renewals 2 months after, 3 months possibly after somebody arrived. So. The sooner he puts pen to paper, the better.
Interesting. From the way to American aspect, which I've been accused of plenty, is this kind of what Americans have as like a defensive coordinator, where he comes in and he works with the defense to try to shore things up that way? Because certainly you've improved in that regard.
Yeah, I guess it is. Because we were so catastrophic at the back under Bob Bradley. The statistics spoke for themselves. We were defensively the worst manager the Premier League has ever seen.
Shout to Tim Sherwood, just like, hey, I did all that for nothing.
Tim Sherwood is in Swindon at the moment, fuming at his legacy's gone up in smoke. It was so catastrophic. With largely the same players that were at Bob Bradley's disposal, we've turned things around. We just look far more confident in the ball. We're working harder off the ball, and it's not just the back four you know, the midfield are pitching in a lot more defensively than they used to. I mean, the fact that a player like Leroy Fair now looks defensively competent says all you need to know, because I was convinced that man didn't have a defensive bone in his body. But everything just looks far more organised and far more cohesive since Paul Clement and Claude Makélélé came in. And it's not just down to tactics. There is clearly more energy in their approach too. I guess the comparison between sort of defensive coordinator and Claude Makélélé's position at Swansea, I guess it's a fair one. That's the impression we get. He's certainly not going to be taking on shooting practice anyway, is he?
Probably not so much. All right, well, thanks for that. Richard, last time we had you on, I think in that time, Guardiola was the worst manager ever. He'd never figure out England at all. Then you were up in second a little bit, but now you've fallen way back because of games in hand. How are you feeling about Manchester City at the moment, especially with your win today and another match midweek?
I feel extremely positive about City at the moment. It feels now like we are over the worst of the bedding in problems that Guardiola was going to have. That's not to say that there aren't more difficult days ahead of us, and I've no doubt some bad results and whatnot still to come. But we're now 9 games unbeaten in all competitions, and crucially, because I think I've said on here before that I don't think we're ever going to completely correct our defensive problems until we get a summer transfer window to do it. So we sort of got to grin and bear it and make the best of what we've got for the rest of the season. Crucially, we're now sticking the ball in the net at the other end, which is something that was evading us quite a lot at the start, well, at the midpoint of the season, when we were having the draws at home to Everton and Middlesbrough and Southampton and all the rest of it. We were dominating possession and getting to the final third, and then we'd suddenly look a little bit clueless and lacking ideas. Ever since Leroy Sané came into the team, because it's changed everything. He had a very slow start to the season, and I think Guardiola has managed him absolutely perfectly, because he's let him sort of dip his toes in the water, and then he trusted him to start the game against Arsenal, which at that point was probably our best performance of the season when we beat them 2-1 at the Etihad, and Sané was crucial in it. And then unfortunately he got injured, and he came back in the draw with Tottenham, and he looked sensational in that game, and he's been fantastic ever since. And he's given us, when he plays on the left and we've got Sterling on the right, we have such a better balance in the team. It allows us to play with great width, and it gives us more space to pull opposition players out of position. It gives us more, we're far more fluid. Sterling and De Bruyne have a lot more space to work in the centre. And that one player being bang in form and being thrown in at the right time by the manager has just brought us right into form. I mean, he's obviously not the only one. So today we defended a lot better than we've become accustomed to. The positional play from the defenders when they were playing out from the back was as good as I recall seeing it. You've got Kolarov, Stones, and then the two fullbacks, and Fernandinho sort of dropping into a sort of centre-back type role, even when we're on the ball. It just makes it so fluid, and then the Sunderland players don't really know who to follow. They're pulled out of position, and our first goal today came from that. Caballero manages to get the ball. Okay, it wasn't his best kick, and it required a good intervention by Yaya. But he gets the ball halfway up the pitch with one kick, and then Yaya sent us away. And as soon as we get it wide, we're to Sterling, who puts the ball in the box to Aguero. Like, it was really quick and really fluid, and it was like all the hallmarks of a Guardiola team, because he requires good wide players. He requires his team to play wide. And it wasn't too dissimilar to what you might have expected his Bayern Munich team to be doing, with Ribery or Robben feeding Lewandowski. It's like that, two fast, pacey wingers, like skillful and tricky wingers, feeding a potent striker. It had all the hallmarks of a Guardiola performance today. Now, obviously, that came against the bottom team in the league, so I'm not going to get too carried away that we managed to beat them. But we were clinical when we needed to be. And like I said, 9 games unbeaten is very impressive, considering that comes off the back of a run where we were shipping 4 goals at Leicester and 4 goals at Everton, and the really disappointing 1-0 defeat at Liverpool on New Year's Eve. And we've just played ourselves bang into form. And, I mean, Aguero has had a sliding doors moment in his season. Obviously, there's been a hell of a lot of reports suggesting that Guardiola wasn't happy with him and that maybe Aguero couldn't do what Guardiola wanted of him. And his head was definitely down for a little bit after he got dropped. The Monaco keeper in that ridiculous 5-3 win spills an Aguero shot in. And ever since then, he's looked right on it again. He's running his backside off. It's the work that the team needs. It's not just running for running sake. It's effective. And he's putting the ball in the net again, which is ultimately, what he's there to do. And he just looks on cloud nine again and unstoppable. And it's great to see. And Guardiola was clearly happy with him. I mean, he was very, very effusive after the win over Huddersfield. And Guardiola keeps saying that he can't do what he wants to do with this team and that City can't achieve their goals without Aguero, which, okay, managers say things to support the players and I'm sure he wouldn't come out and say, no, we're open to offers in the summer. But it's a pretty extreme thing to say if the guy isn't part of your long-term plans. So I think that's hopefully making everybody feel a bit more settled and less scared about the possibility of losing Aguero in the summer. Everything just feels all right at the moment. And I would say, if there's such thing, we're getting ourselves into form at the perfect time in the season. Obviously, it would have been nice to be a bit more consistent around the time that Chelsea started pulling away with the lead. But in terms of being in there at the end, whilst the teams around us, you know, Arsenal are being Arsenal, Liverpool always look like slipping up whenever they come up against the team in the bottom half of the table, and United refuse, like steadfastly refuse to lift their heads above six. There's only, obviously, Spurs are in great form, and Chelsea above us are in great form, but we're really in a good position to take advantage of any slip-ups. Obviously, we've got an FA Cup quarter-final to come with two games from a final, and the dream is still very much alive in the Champions League. However far we'll get with that is, you know, I couldn't begin to really guess. But we're in form at the perfect time of the season to start hammering home a bit of an advantage in the competitions that we're in.
Yeah, I'm really glad you pointed out Sané, because he has been incredible since making his way back into the team. Or I guess really for the first time, making his way back makes it sound like he's been there longer than 8 months. But I want to talk about somebody at the back who I thought has been overrated for like 3 years, but now suddenly has stepped up performances and now maybe a little underrated, and that's John Stones, who I think has had a pretty decent month on the whole. The Monaco stuff looked pretty bad. But would you agree that he's looked a little bit better of late and that maybe your defense has been not getting a fair shake of late?
I mean, what I would say on John Stones, I would, when you say been overrated for the last 3 years, I would probably have agreed with you during his time at Everton. But then what I would say on that is he was managed by Roberto Martinez, who was, in my opinion, an atrocious defensive coach, proven at both of his Premier League clubs. He couldn't organise a defence. So having a particularly talented young defender learn under Martinez, I don't think was ideal for him. I think coming to City with Guardiola, who is, despite what people think and despite what people say about our defence, Guardiola is an excellent defensive manager, because he has to be, because it forms the basis of everything he wants to do with his team. The playing out from the back, the organisation that you have to be able to do that on the ball and off the ball is pretty extreme. So Guardiola's a very good defensive manager, as proven with the likes of Jerome Boateng and Javi Martinez at Bayern Munich. Stones this season, to me, I think has settled into City really well. He's not been perfect, but I don't think overrated is the term I would use. I think seeing him at close quarters, the way I see it, is I actually think he's a bit of a step ahead of the rest of our defenders. And a lot of his mistakes, not all of them, but a lot of his mistakes come from the fact that, or have come from the fact that, his teammates aren't quite in tune with him, because he's the most Guardiola-like defender that we've got. So when you think of the pass back where we conceded a goal against Southampton, that's because he's got Vincent Kompany stood 5 yards away from him. And at the exact time that he goes to play the ball, Kompany steps up, which he wasn't supposed to do. And that leaves a massive amount of space. The one against Leicester when he played a pretty horrific back pass when we were already beaten. If you freeze frame that at the point when he's about to release the ball and look where each of his teammates are, none of them are in a good position to receive the ball. And you could say, yeah, he should see that and should just stick it in row Z or should hoof it up the pitch. But he's probably under pretty strict instruction from his manager not to do that, because that isn't benefiting us in the long term. He's not learning anything from doing that. He's not getting to grips with what Guardiola wants. So I think a lot of his problems are his teammates not being up to his standard. And I'm aware that might sound a bit daft because there have been individual mistakes as well. But I think he's the man that Guardiola is going to build a defence around. And I think long term, I think we're looking at a future club captain. And if England develop him properly, then I think he's got a pretty big international career ahead of him as well. I think he's a sensationally talented defender.
I just thought it was important to mention that because a lot of the time in the larger sports media, people get stuck on an idea and then write it out for too long. And I've been very harsh on John Stones, but I do think it's important for people listening this and to also people in the industry that you need to kind of do rechecks constantly on players because you could get stuck in the wrong mindset for too long and then just be pretty much wrong, full stop on a player. Anyway, I thought that was a very interesting transition by him. And to your point, just developing and fits the mold of a Guardiola player better than the other options around there. Also, dropping Otamendi seems to have helped, but that's another issue for another day. for Tottenham, huge win today for us against Everton, our ninth straight home league win, which is the best at White Hart Lane, which means it will forever be the record for the best at White Hart Lane because we don't have that many matches left. Oh, wait, I suppose we technically do, but we'd have to lose and then do it again. I'm pretty sure this is going to be the record, which is absolutely incredible in the final season for us to have made the home ground so important. And we heard about Pochettino saying at the start of the season that we wanted to make sure that we would, you know, leave White Hart Lane on a historical high note. And we seem to be doing that in the league, at least, as we currently have more points at this stage in a season after match week 27 than ever previously in the Premier League. So that has gone well. The home form has gone well. Europe, let's not talk about it. So getting another win this week against Everton and a very in-form Everton team. They've got that defense playing a lot better under a manager who's now being linked to Barcelona. I think it's probably too soon for that job. But I've been very impressed with what Everton have done the past few weeks. They press well. They have good wing play. They had a striker that was joint top of the Premier League. In a lot of ways, us playing Everton is a little bit like looking in a mirror. But on the day, their press just was not very effective. It reminded me of a Liverpool match last season where Liverpool gegenpressed, quote-unquote, also some bells in the background because every time you mention Klopp, you have to bring it up. But if you're actively pressing and you aren't dispossessing the other team, you get tired out very quickly because you need to see some evidence of it, I think, before effort levels might just drop just a hair and then you can get caught out a fair bit. And I think Everton struggled from that a little bit today. The scoreline, I think, did flatter them to an extent. Kane easily should have had his hat trick. He had a chance near post on Robles and then another chance later where he could have put the ball through him but chipped him. He even mentioned it in his post-match conference how frustrated he was that he didn't just put his foot through it. But on the whole, was very pleased with our performance today. One of our better 90-minute performances. Unfortunately, it went to 94-plus. So we had a couple of conceded goals in there that we probably shouldn't have. Lukaku's goal, it was the first goal Lukaku has ever scored against us. It was a well-taken finish, but if Jan Vertonghen doesn't fall, he probably isn't in the situation to score there. It just seems like we've always had Lukaku's number, whether or not that's because Vertonghen knows him so well, and now we also have Toby in the mix. I don't know what it is, but he never looked like scoring before that moment, and Jan did slip right before the goal. But yeah, it was just a great team performance from us pretty much from the off. Was very, very pleased. Eriksen, maybe not at his high-flying best, but obviously not too much of a detriment. One of the things I was really looking forward to watching in this match was Idrissa Gana Guy, or whatever order he wants to put those last names in, with Victor Wanyama, because I just thought it would be really interesting to see those two kind of going up against each other. And then they just kind of didn't, which I suppose isn't the most surprising because they're both defensive-minded midfielders. But I thought there would be more situations with those two and maybe Dembele. Obviously, we've heard a lot about Schneiderlin since going over from Manchester United. But it seemed like we largely bypassed them through the midfield. So anyway, that was something I was really looking forward to seeing that didn't come to fruition. But it was a fun watch on the whole for somebody with a team in it. I assume it was a fun watch for the neutrals. A lot of fun storylines in there with top five defenses and good strikers and everything like that. But yeah, All in all, was very, very pleased with how we looked. I'm still not convinced by Dyer at center back this season, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just that his position has changed and so his mindset had to change and now we're changing it back, or if it's the specific role he's playing in the back three. But earlier in the season, we were linked with Stefan de Vrij, who's at Lazio, and I laughed it off because we already have four center backs. And the more I see Dyer in there, what we saw of Wimmer a few weeks back when he had to deputize and didn't look particularly great, I think we might actually go in for a center back, which sounds insane considering we probably have two of the 10 best center backs in the Premier League in the same team. Saying that we need to go get another one may sound silly, but if we're going to play three at the back, I mean, you want to have five. You can do what Chelsea did, and now they have six because they brought Ake back on loan. But that's another discussion for a different day of how we need to bolster our team if we are set on playing this formation long term. But yeah, was very pleased. Ben Davis, who had been pretty poor the past few weeks, had a very good match, and now everybody's talking about how he's been underrated. It's like, he had a good match. Let's see if he does it again before we start getting too excited. But he did have a good match. He was given the assist on the Kane goal, which is adorable as a stats person. Very frustrating when you see things like that given as assists, passing the ball to somebody pretty near the halfway line, and then Kane just does some individual brilliance to score the goal. But all in all, not too bad, but very pleased. Poch obviously disgruntled that we gave up the late goal. But yeah, very, very pleased with our performance on the whole, and the win was massive for us. With United and Arsenal both dropping points, Liverpool dropped their points last week against Leicester, so them taking points off Arsenal just kind of kept the train chugging for us in the right way. Hopefully West Ham can take something off of Chelsea. Richard mentioned how informed City are. Maybe we could make a little something out of this title race if West Ham could pull a little magic. But all in all, very pleased. I do think that this largely solidifies our top four chances. We do not have many quote-unquote difficult fixtures left. The two biggest ones left on the docket, Manchester United and Arsenal, both at home. And we've already talked about how good we've been at home this season. So if you get 3 points in one of them, that's pretty much us sealed into the top four, which is obviously very important for a club like Tottenham at this stage.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, and going from talking about top four, that has clearly been Tottenham's objective for years. I'm interested to hear what you guys would consider a successful season at this stage, and if you're on track with that, and if you're not, what kind of repercussions could we see in the summer?
For Swansea, the objective from day one has been survival. That's never changed, but the likelihood of it happening has definitely changed. Towards the end of 2016, I was saying that this was completely out of our reach. We were pretty much down already. Nothing was ever going to change that, and suddenly we are at the start of March, and you'd have to say that we're looking pretty in a pretty good position to achieve that, 5 points off the bottom three. Although you know other teams down the bottom are also picking up wins, meaning that that we're still under pressure from those teams. I think most neutrals looking at the relegation battle at the moment would say that Swansea are one of the best placed teams to stay up. I think the I'd be far more worried if I was a Sunderland fan, a Hull fan, a Middlesbrough fan, or even a Leicester or a Palace fan than I am as a Swansea City fan. And the only thing that we need to do to stay up is not mess this up and just sustain what we've got. Just keep doing what we're doing at the moment. Keep working our socks off and just do not become complacent. As long as we do that, I think we will probably stay up reasonably comfortably when you look at our fixtures. But that is entirely reliant on us not getting complacent and just keeping up the kind of momentum that we've got at the moment.
If you weren't able to stay up, will we see a lot of player shifting? Do you have players on high contracts that you'd kind of have to get rid of, or would you be worried that players like Sigurdsson and Llorente would get poached?
Oh, there's no way that Gylfi Sigurdsson could play in the Championship. I mean, he's just such an incredible footballer. I say it every time I'm on this podcast, but he's far too good for Swansea. And I know this has been a team turnaround over the last few months. But without Gylfi Sigurdsson, there's no way we'd have done it. His delivery is spectacular. He's just such a gifted footballer. He should be playing Europa League football at the very minimum, probably Champions League football. If we're being honest, he's an incredible footballer and we'd struggle to keep hold of him. Likewise, I don't think Llorente would have much interest in playing in the Championship. Fabianski would be a great buy for any Premier League side, and I don't think he would fancy going down to the second tier. There are a few other players that we could sell on. We'd want to cash in probably if we were to go down to the Championship. But like I said, at the moment, that's looking less and less likely by the week. And hopefully, I'm not jinxing it now, but hopefully we can keep this up now, and come the end of the season, we'll be in a much stronger position to retain a player like Gylfi Sigurdsson or Llorente, who I think we're going to struggle to keep hold of whichever league we're in next season.
Well, as I said to you before we started recording and everything, I think Swansea is a better league, the Premier League is a better league with Swansea in it. So hopefully that will continue. Richard, obviously for years it was Champions League. You were doing well domestically. You weren't doing well in Europe. Kind of turned around the past couple of years. Is silverware what you have to get for this to be a successful season under Guardiola, or is this more of a long-term idea?
It's a bit of a mix of both. I mean, obviously, we can't pretend that silverware isn't important when you spend the kind of money that City typically spend in a transfer window and with the quality of players that we've got and how high up the league we are and all the rest of it. Of course, winning trophies is the proof of your success, isn't it? But the long-term idea at the moment is more important. So if we don't win the league this year, which obviously at the moment there is a chance and we can keep the pressure on Chelsea because we still have to play them, and by the time they've played West Ham, we'll have a game in hand on them again. So we have to be there to mop up if they make, to take advantage if they make any mistakes. Winning the league was the aim at the start of the season. Now it has to be about sort of, at the very least, consolidating a top three position so we don't have to go through a qualifier for the Champions League again. That has to be the league aim. And then it has to be about the quality of performance. It has to be about what's happened in the last nine games, playing the way that, you know, showing the performances to be in line with what Guardiola was brought in to do in terms of laying this blueprint that's going to create an identity for the club for essentially all coming time. I mean, what they want is for Guardiola to do what Johan Cruyff did at Barcelona, create an image that permeates the whole club and that any manager who comes in can then work with and adapt slightly. Guardiola's remit at City is sensational. It's like he's ridiculously powerful. We've obviously got a strong shout at winning the FA Cup, which presents me with a massive personal dilemma because I'm at a wedding that I can't get out of on FA Cup final day, which is, given that there's still given that there's a possibility that it could be a City United final, I've already let the couple know that I will never, ever forgive them if that comes to pass, which they seem all right with. So anyway, Yeah, we're one game from a Wembley semi-final, and that game is Middlesbrough away. So realistically, without counting chickens, we should be there. And we've got a strong shout at winning a trophy there that we haven't won since 2011. The Champions League is interesting because we're not through that yet. But I think it's, I think we're equipped to do well in it. We're not guaranteed to be in the quarterfinal. Monaco will almost certainly score against us in the second leg. But the two-goal cushion that we've got from that incredible first game, I mean, it was the best match I've ever been at. It was sensational. To have the cushion from that gives us a strong chance of getting through. And then from there, the only team that would scare me that we could draw would be Atletico Madrid, because not because the scary, because I wouldn't make us favourites against Real Madrid or Bayern Munich. But we've got enough in us to cause them problems. Atletico scare me because of their defensive organisation and knowing what we struggle against and what our strengths are. I think we've got a strong shout of going pretty far in the Champions League. I can never quite decide how you judge success in it, because if we get to the semi-final, we've got as far as we went last year. But if we do that by beating, I don't know, who could we say we drew Bayern Munich or Real Madrid in the quarterfinal, that is a better achievement than beating Kiev and PSG was to get to the semi-final last year. So that would be significant progress. But we could then go out in the semi-final and it sort of looked like no progress. I think the Champions League is, I don't like using it as a barometer of success because there's so many different factors that come into play. But I do think with our style and what we're good at, and as I said before, the part of the season where we're hitting our best form, I think we're equipped to push pretty far in it. But if you get to the semi-final, it can go anybody's way from there, can't it? Success to me would be an improvement or a continuation of the current form and the style that we're playing in. If we can win the FA Cup, that would be fantastic. Keeping the pressure on Chelsea is as much as we can hope for now. And if we're going to have a shot at winning the league, it has to come from Chelsea making a mess of things. Although that is always the way that we win the league, to be fair. it comes from somebody else dropping the ball. And then Europe's a bit of an unknown. And as for repercussions, all that's going to happen in the summer is Pep's going to get another war chest, as the papers.
Another two wingbacks.
Yeah, it is going to be defensive reinforcements, and we'll see what happens with Aguero as to whether we need a striker or not. It's going to be about moulding the team. I don't think there is a manager in the world more secure in their job than Guardiola, not because he's unsackable or infallible, but because he's been given such a remit at City that he'd have to get relegated from this point for them to bin him off.
Yeah, it'd been a very long-term thing to just get him there in the first place. They aren't going to turn it short-term all of a sudden.
Yeah.
All right, for Tottenham, I think it's top four again. I've mentioned in previous shows, I think a trophy is very important to cement what we've done here, something that you can look back historically and say that's what we accomplished, because I'm sure many people will know Tottenham tend to always have flair players that are worth remembering, but very few of them have really etched their names in the history books with silverware. So I think that would be absolutely massive, especially for this young group. We've had Joshy on here a fair bit talking about how important it is, regardless of the size of the competition, that Manchester United keep just getting trophies, and that affects the attitude at the club. And I think that Tottenham sorely need that. We are also still alive in the FA Cup. I don't know if we're going to have a chance to make your scheduling issue any easier, but if we can, I'd love to. obviously already out of Europe, so that's not on the cards anymore. But I think this is the last year that it's okay to not win a trophy. I think if we get in top four one more year, help cover the rest of the stadium build cost-wise, keep ourselves on the forefront of Europe, keep all of our better players, because if we don't make top four this year, if we do not get Champions League, with as good and, for lack of a better phrase, lovey-dovey as all of our players are with each other, both on the pitch and off, I would not be surprised if, say, Toby Alderweireld or Hugo Lloris start looking around. I think most of the young kids are here at least for another year. Your Canes, your Alis, your Eriksons, your Lamellas, barring injury issues. But if we don't make Champions League, Toby, who, by the way, is the one that has yet to officially sign his contract, although there has been some rumors that he's actually already done it and we're waiting to announce it when bad things happen, which has been a trend with our other contract announcements. We'll see. But that could be a repercussion if we don't make top four, is that we could lose some of our older high-name players. But next year, I think, is when we start getting – Richard, you'll be familiar with this. When all of a sudden you had to do well in the Champions League, I think it could start getting like that for Pochettino, where we absolutely love him. I don't think that it's realistic that we'd sack him anytime soon. But if we continue to not get trophies because people have short memories, there will start to be that negative spin around a manager. And depending on who it is, that spin can turn into a sacking very quickly, or it can take 20 years. No shots fired at any other London club's cough. but anyway, yeah. So for this year, I think it's just top four, and I'm pretty confident of it. If we didn't, I don't think there would be any significant things within the club, but there could be some players leaving. Next year, if we don't make top four or get a trophy, I think is really when questions could start to be asked. But our play style is going to negate a lot of that, but I feel like that's a long-term issue that we have at the club to begin with. All right, and now a second topic that we kind of teased, well, I kind of teased in my Tottenham thing, talking about Harry Kane and how he's a great striker, is a narrative started swirling around this Tottenham-Everton match, which was the battle of these two young strikers, Lukaku and Kane. They came into this match on the same amount of goals. They didn't leave that way. Cough. I think there's a larger question to be asked, especially with Aguero's suspensions and some other issues with the Gabriel Jesus thing. You also have Diego Costa, you have Ibrahimovic, who's kind of I almost said one season wonder. I meant in the Premier League, obviously, even though Zlatan's track record has said in the past. But I'm curious to hear who you individually think is the best striker in the Premier League right now.
Oof, it's a tough one. It's a very tough one. I'd probably go between Diego Costa and Zlatan Ibrahimovic. I'd say probably Ibrahimovic, even though I thought he had a stinker against Bournemouth on the weekend. But I think he...
Unfortunately, there was no other storylines about him that day.
No, nothing at nothing at all to disguise the fact that, that he did have a very poor match. definitely not an elbow in the head. I mean that's actually the kind of thing you'd expect to see from Diego Costa, both receiving a kick in the head and then elbowing somebody for it. That's his kind of track record. He's calmed that down this season. There's no doubt about that. He's still got a nasty little streak in him, but he's got it more under control, you feel. I don't know. I just think Ibrahimovic, the leadership that he provides puts him, you know, in a different bracket, I think, to Costa. I think that just about puts him at a new level. I do also think that he contributes slightly more to the team than Costa does, other than goals. So I'd go Ibrahimovic just about, but you're right to point out the fact that the Premier League's now got a wealth of strikers who you could make a good claim for being the best. I mean, Kane is fantastic. There's no doubt about that. And he's right up there with Costa and Ibrahimovic. Aguero, I know he's been in and out of the team, but I still think he's an incredible striker. One of the best players we've seen in the last 10 years, say, in the Premier League. These are strikers who deserve to be mentioned among the very best, not just in the Premier League, but in the world, if I'm being honest. And that's one of the Premier League's biggest strengths at the moment is the quality of strikers.
Yeah, my bias makes me want to say Aguero, and then a bit of me thinks, well, he's been out of form this season, and his record against the top seven isn't great, and his suspensions have definitely been a problem, and well out of character. But what really surprised me was to read earlier, and it's quite obvious now I think about it, given how many goals he scored, but he's well on course for his most fruitful season at City, which, given that this is the season where he's been most questioned ever since he joined us, is pretty incredible. In almost any other season that he's been in England, I probably would have had him as the best striker in the league. But as Guto said, we're awash with great strikers at the moment. Obviously, it pains me that Ibrahimovic is doing so well at United, but he deserves all the credit in the world. And what I like about it, in as much as a City fan, I can like any striker doing well at United, is that it's another... His his success in England at his age is another two fingers up to the arrogant little England idea that you can't prove yourself until you do it in England. Because there was a while, there was this trope that he didn't score against English clubs in the Champions League. And so that proved that he wasn't a truly world-class striker because he only did it in easier leagues. And now he's walked into the Premier League at 36 and he's absolutely tearing it up. And so whilst I'll never celebrate his success whilst he's where he is, there is a little bit of me enjoys seeing people with very insular opinions and takes on football be shown up a little bit, because the guy is fantastic and he has always been fantastic and he shows no signs of slowing down. So he's got a very good shout at being the best striker in the league. My personal favourite, and if you were to give me the option of any striker that in the league that I would have at City, were it possible, it'd be Harry Kane. I absolutely love him. I love watching him play football. I love the variety to his goals. It's so instinctive to him. He works hard. And to me, he's like a modern version of what I was always told was a classic striker. Like the kind of striker that I didn't, or the classic English striker at least, that maybe due to my age, I didn't get to see a whole lot of, or that passed me by a little bit. And obviously I'm more in tune with the modern strikers that I've seen more of. Harry Kane is like, he's like a weird modern throwback. He does everything that a classic centre forward should do, but he's very adept at bringing his teammates into play. He's, I mean, everything is instinct, isn't it? Obviously, the work he must do in training to get to the level he's at is immense, and Pochettino has done a phenomenal job with him. And to be fair, Sherwood did well before that. But everything he does is so natural that it's a, you know, if you're born with talent, then he was. I love watching him play. And to me, he's in that bracket now where if you've got Messi and Ronaldo still as the top two players in the world in their own bracket, Harry Kane has, to me, fully joined that next tier and is prominent amongst it. I think he's a sensational striker.
Well, you saying that you're going to try to remove bias certainly makes my job harder, because now do I have to also try to do that? I don't know. I will say that since becoming the striker for Tottenham Hotspur after the Adebayor Soldado experiment, Kane has the most goals in the Premier League. Full stop. I'm not going to put opinion on that because I'll either be wrong or biased or any other words like that. But what I will say is it's interesting, especially hearing you talk about Zlatan and his record against English teams, because that's all Kane has done, so he's probably the best of all time. But no, but genuinely, one of the reasons I love the Lukaku comparison is because I do not think that Harry Kane would do as well in a different league as basically all of the other names that we've mentioned. And I'm not sure why. I don't know if it is because he's more of a throwback. He has a very English feel about him, which makes sense because he's the English one out of this whole group. I think at a certain point, if you're talking about elite or world class, physicality becomes a part of it. And the fact that Kane is not as... I don't want to say athletic because that sounds so rude about a professional that is at a very high level. But Lukaku is a better athlete. He can get out at pace more. He can shrug people off more easily. Kane relies a lot on guile, which is impressive that he has at such a young age, to be fair. Finds himself in the right situations. There was a very understated thing he did today a couple of times on the outside of the box against Everton where he received the ball with his back to goal and somehow maneuvered in front of his defender to be face up, which, A, as a defender, you shouldn't let your man do. But the fact that he was able to do it repetitively, I think, shows the kind of effort he puts in on the training ground. We've heard stories from Pochettino that he's had to take Kane off shooting drills because he was working too hard, and if he missed one, he'd stay after. And because of all the matches that we've been having, because of all these other competitions that now we're out of, he was worried that Kane was going to tire himself out from all those shooting drills. And we've heard very positive things from inside the club. Like Brad Friedel, back before Kane ever blew up, said that the reason he thought Kane would one day be successful is because of the amount of shooting drills he's done and the different ways that he can score goals. Not like right foot, left foot, head. but, you know, chips and curve and just lashing at it and just hitting it through the floor. And so I think to an extent, Kane has overachieved past his talent because of work ethic. The rest of the people that we're naming are insanely on the talent side. I don't think anybody thinks that Lukaku works as hard as Kane does in training, but that that base level ability, I think, is higher. And so when you're saying who's the best, I think you get into a little tricky situation. So maybe you shouldn't ask it on your podcast, Kevin. But I agree with Gitto, with Aguero. He's just one of those players, it just always pulls the eye. Over the past few years, he's been absolutely incredible. I'm curious as to what metric you were referring to, Richard, with he's on pace to have his best year, because he's at half of his best season in the Premier League. He'd have to go on a pretty crazy run.
Goals scored in total, though. He's over 20 now, isn't he?
For this season?
In total.
Oh, in all competitions.
Yeah, all competitions.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That makes a lot more sense, because he has been doing very well. All right, yeah, so take that back. I was kind of a douche for no reason. But, yeah, I think Aguero's better. I think Costa is definitely more feared. If you're a defender, you probably don't want that in your life. And he can be just absolutely clinical. But, yeah, I apparently am also going to put that these are all so good for one day. Guaranteed that they're fit. And that they aren't able to get a red card for no reason, I'd probably still take Aguero. I don't know if that's a little bit of bias against Ibrahimovic. I agree that Ibrahimovic might do more for Manchester United than Costa does for Chelsea, but neither of them offer that much outside of goals for their teams for me, unless you do want to focus on the off-the-field stuff, because I do believe that Ibrahimovic coming in brought just such a winning mentality, you know, to a club that needed that cough. obviously, Manchester have won their United have won their trophies, but in that regard, I think Ibrahimovic is much better to have in your dressing room than Diego Costa. But all in all, I think I'm gonna stick with Aguero. But if we're projecting for the future, I wouldn't be surprised if Lukaku ends up having a bigger, more noteworthy international career than Harry Kane will. I don't know how much more improved we're going to see Kane get from where he is now, but I think Lukaku still has a while left on his potential. So it'll be very fascinating to see if he can fully reach that. I think football would be the better for it if we get to see Romelu Lukaku live up to his potential, which at this point, I'm not sure there's a cap to. All right, after that double topic, we'll quickly hit player watch and then get out of here. So we will quickly go through and mention a player that impressed and one that disappointed in our club's most recent fixture, or since we all won, you can talk about somebody that impressed you from the opposition if you'd rather.
For Swansea, it's very difficult. Very, very. It was a fantastic team performance. If I was to pick just one, I guess Fernando Llorente scored two goals. I think that's the third game this season that he scored a brace in. Which is pretty impressive for a team right down the bottom of the league, and generally his play around the pitch was fantastic. He really matched Burnley physically. I don't think anybody really disappointed. Perhaps Luciano Narsing didn't quite live up to the hopes on his first start for the club. He was played instead of Wayne Routledge, something that everybody's been calling for a long time. He maybe didn't get the freedom that he really needed down the wing. He did the basics very well, but didn't get any of that. You didn't really get the excitement that people were hoping to see from him. Never really had that time or space with the ball to really do that. And a couple of his crosses were a little bit disappointing. I would still definitely start him ahead of Wayne Routledge in the next game and the one after to get Narsing up to speed in the Premier League and get him adapting as quickly as possible. And even though he was maybe a little bit less exciting than we were hoping, he is still a much better option at winger than Wayne Routledge, who gives you absolutely nothing going forward. So maybe Narsing was slightly underwhelming, but you know that's as poor as it got. That generally was a very good team performance from the Swans.
My City player that I was most impressed with, I think I'd have to go for David Silva, because he continues to be ridiculous. I would always say that Silva's the best player I've had the pleasure of seeing in a City shirt. And I know that a fair few fans of an older generation who saw some of the great City players like Colin Bell and Francis Lee, etc., also now put Silva as the best they've ever seen. And he continues to astound and amaze me, because he was a player that in the summer, a lot of people, a lot of City writers that I really respect and whose opinions I value really highly, all thought that Silva might be the player to suffer under Guardiola, and that he wouldn't prosper with the pressing and the sort of intensity of the play required. And it's been quite the opposite. He's a shining example to every single player in that team. And he's benefiting again now from, as again, I said at length earlier, he's benefiting from having the two young lads on the wings tormenting fullbacks and getting in the gaps between centre-backs and fullbacks, because it means he's got the whole of the middle of the pitch to play with. And I mean, he doesn't really need space anyway, because the guy's incredibly adept at getting between the lines unnoticed. A phenomenal ability. And to me, I think he was probably City's man of the match today. And he's showing no signs of fading. And the great thing for us is that as a player who's never relied on pace, we don't have to worry about him slowing down. It's just as long as his mental faculties are there, he should remain a top-class player for some time yet. It's a privilege to watch him in a City shirt, and today was just another one to add to the many great David Silva City performances. I can't do a worst player for City, because I thought everybody stepped up. So my Sunderland player that I was mildly impressed with, I thought Oviedo, when he was covering Sterling, did a decent job on him, because in the first half in particular, he was blocking Sterling from getting a lot of effective balls in. And then we did get a bit of fortune that the cross that he did finally have success with that found Aguero. It took a little deflection into Aguero's pass, so we had a little bit of fortune there. But I thought to keep Sterling, who is skinning every fullback that he comes up against at the moment and several times a game, although he didn't have an easy afternoon, I thought Oviedo did all right for a while.
Yeah, for Tottenham, I was really impressed with the left side of our defense today. I thought Jan and Ben Davis both had terrific matches. Ben Davis, I think, more looked terrific because of how poor he's looked lately. So I think that's a little bit of a gap bias, if that makes any sense. So I guess by default, I'm going to go to Jan Vertonghen. There's an opinion I've held for a while now about center backs, that if you stand out at center back for doing good things, it is an amazing thing. Because typically when you hear about center backs, they've done their job wrong. And if they've done their job well, you don't really hear much, because they either kept a player from getting the ball or they shielded them well to prevent good shots from getting in on target. But every once in a while, Jan puts in a match as a center back that is noteworthy for good things, that isn't scoring goals or anything crazy like that. He's not Macaulaying in six headers a year. But I was so impressed with Jan today. On the ball, he got a little cheeky towards the end with some ball tricks. I know that he slipped on the Lukaku goal, but I'm not going to blame him for that. But was just so impressed with Jan, who has largely been overshadowed since Toby Alderweireld came into the club. I don't think anybody, Tottenham fan or otherwise, would say that Jan is the better of the two. But I think that that has caused people to respect him a little bit less. And it's matches like today that really show why he fully deserves praise of everybody. Because just because Toby is absolutely incredible doesn't mean that Jan isn't great. And so I like it when he has performances like this that really show the level that he's still capable of reaching. All right. Not really any match previews, because it's going to be a shortened Premier League anyway. And we already hit you with two topics, so we will be done for the day now. So if you have anything you'd like to plug or want to tell people where to reach you, now would be a good time.
If you want to hear more positive podcasts about Swansea City, you can find us at the Jackcast on Twitter. We should be recording midweek, so this should be up around Tuesday or Wednesday.
If you want to read anything that I have to say about City, you can do that at Yahoo Sport UK, where I write two articles a week. And I also contribute to the Blue Moon podcast, which is released every Friday and is a dedicated Manchester City podcast.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, at KevRuff on Twitter. I also host the FPL Roundtable on this very channel. I'm also now the lead fantasy writer for Goal.com, so go check that out. We're going to have some Champions League stuff and Premier League stuff this week, as we have both. So, throw your eyes over there. Also write for the EaglesBeat.com each week with a fantasy article, and host a DFS, which is Daily Fantasy Sports, video for VIPBet.com. So if you're interested in that, be sure to look over there as well. All right, thanks so much for joining us, guys. It's been a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.